We had this one house on our route to school walking. The Doberman was so tall, the fence was so small. And one day, it mustered up the strength and it jumped at. I ran so fast, I kicked my shoes off. I couldn't tell you where the shoes went. I got in trouble because my shoes were left. I went home shoeless, you know? So mom was upset, but it was either the shoes or me, and I chose me.
What parents do matters so much more than what they say. You can talk about it, but you got to be about it, you know? And your mom modeled toughness. She modeled resilience. She, you know, she's there going to work every day, no matter how hard it is, right?
And you know what? I'm tall. My mom in her prime was 6'1", 215. So when she said something, she meant it. And I've seen her throw a brick through a cab windshield. Hey, they call her Queen of the Jungle. That's her nickname.
The coach that is hard on you is the greatest gift in life, because the coaches that let you be lazy, well, then we sink to that low common.
That's right. Yeah. Ricardo's Rules of Resilience. Tune in, people. Every episode is impactful. You become more burly just by listening. Let's go.
Welcome, everybody, to Ricardo's Rules of Resilience, a podcast that gives you the tools to withstand and recover from difficulties. Today, we have a special guest with us, Todd Watkins. He is the program director at the Indianapolis Health Club, which is a very nice, beautiful facility. I've been down there for a DECA event. And I got to tell you, Todd, you have the nicest locker rooms I've ever seen. I thought we were like an NBA locker room. I mean, there's couches, carpet. I think there's even a TV.
There is.
Like, oh man, this is nicer than my living room. It's a nice place.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because not a lot of people know this, but our facility was actually used as the Pacers practice facility way back in, I want to say, the late 90s. So it really was, you know, an NBA locker room. So
I believe it. I mean, it is by far. I mean, it's very nice. Your whole facility is nice, but I've just never seen anything like that in my life. It was so cool.
We all enjoy it. So
yeah, I bet so. Well, Todd, I know that, you know, prior to this role as program director at the Indianapolis Healthplex, you've had quite an interesting life. You moved around a dozen times in your life and had some achievements as an athlete. And so you're here to tell us about resilience. So would you just give us a little background? We'll start out with just a quick elevator pitch of who you are in 30 seconds.
So obviously, Todd Watkins, program director here at the Indianapolis Healthplex. Grew up, you know, in Detroit, Michigan, moved around a bunch of times, spent some time in North Carolina, Cincinnati, Ohio. I then went to college, played basketball overseas, came back, coached basketball, changed careers again, worked at the YMCA, changed careers again. I then went into the health industry, working at the hospitals, and then kind of found my little niche and recognized I like being creative. So then I changed careers one more time. And that's kind of how I ended here. So got a lot to speak on when it comes to being resilient. You know, I got the not so best upbringing, but learned a lot of life lessons, man, especially through sports and just through working with people. So happy to be here today. I look forward to, you know, talking about being resilient with you.
Yes, sir. I've been looking forward to this, and I'm so glad you made time for us. Well, let's start with growing up in Detroit and the challenges you faced as a youngster.
So obviously, I grew up with a single mother. I've got three older sisters, so I'm the baby. Grew up in Detroit in the 90s. So it wasn't the best place to be. And I grew up in the heart of Detroit on the west side. I don't want to throw out any street names because some people can correlate that with certain type of gang activity. And I'm not affiliated with any of that. But I just want to say,
had you grown up in a nice neighborhood and with a two-parent home and all of that luxury, just having three older sisters, you would have to have some resilience being the baby boy.
You know, that is 100% correct. I always tell people growing up with three sisters is like having four mothers. And all of them would tell you something different. Don't listen to this person. I mean, it was rough, man. So, and all three of my sisters are very stubborn, very headstrong, overprotective of me, you know, and I'm 6'7". Yeah. All my sisters, they're tall for women. They're about 5'8", 5'10". So I want to say around 9, 10 years old, man, I surpassed them in height. And, you know, I was a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. They couldn't tell me what to do anymore. I was holding my own in some of those fights.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to be 6'7" just to be able to fight.
But no, like I said, growing up in Detroit, it taught me a lot of life lessons early on, life lessons that not a lot of people, you know, learn until they become adults or, when it's too late. So learning how to navigate, you know, the streets, learning how to, you know, be home before the street lights come on, learning how to understand, you know, this is a situation I should probably get myself out of, whether it just be walking away, making sure you're walking with, you know, friends, family to school. Being smart, obviously, you know, there were a lot of dogs, not a lot of fences. So learning how to run real fast and jump real high, that was a lot, man.
Having come up in, I'm not saying it's inner city Detroit, but I grew up in the inner city of Fort Wayne. And I can tell you, there ain't no doodles in the inner city, right? There's no labradoodles. It's pit bulls, German Shepherds, Rottweilers.
Yeah. And then what's the really tall? Is it a Doberman, the really tall ones?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? I'll never forget. We had this one house on our route to school walking. The Doberman was so tall. The fence was so small. There were days where, like, you know what? This dog is going to jump this fence. And one day, it mustered up the strength and it jumped that fence. And I don't think I ran so fast. I kicked my shoes off. I couldn't tell you where the shoes went. I got in trouble because my shoes were left. I went home shoeless, you know? So mom was upset, but it was either the shoes or me. And I chose me. So the shoes went bye-bye. So
to your point, I mean, I graduated high school in 92 and late 80s, early 90s, it was like crime was a job. I mean, we still have crime, but I mean, it was, you got to lock up everything. You got to be careful where you park. I mean, people I went to high school with, played football with, getting shot. I mean, it was definitely a different time.
I mean, I can tell you this much. Growing up in Detroit, our house, we had bars on our windows. So even if you could open the window, there's still a layer of bars that you couldn't get, you know, in or out of. Also, like I said, growing up in the area I grew up in, we had to learn early on the difference between fireworks and gunshots. You know, looking back on it now is, I would never want to explain to my 8-year-old, you know, what to do in case of a drive-by, how to notice the difference between someone selling drugs and someone using drugs, what to do, obviously, being black, what to do if the cops pull you over, what to say. Those are things that, me specifically, I was prepped on at a very early age. Looking back at it, like I said, one thing that my mom told me, you know, at 11 years old, I stood 6'1". So I knew I was 11. My family knew I was 11. Obviously, someone on the street can look and see you're younger, but at 6'1", you know, you're a height of a grown man, and you have to, you know, remind yourself of that at that point in time. You know, I got prepped early on, you know, the do's and don'ts of being out in the street. My mom always said, hey, be home before the street lights come on, and anytime things get a little hectic and people start yelling, just walk away. You never know when, you know, an argument can turn into gunshots or, you know, anything can happen. That's pretty much, you know, the mindset I've taken with me my entire life, you know.
What do you feel like was the key to you? I mean, obviously you had some strong, loving influences. You have your four moms looking out for you in that time of life when so many turn to other ways. You're surrounded by it. There's lots of easy pitfalls to fall into. What do you think were some of the keys to your resilience as a young man?
Listening to people. And that's not something that I say lightly. Everyone has had somebody in their life that said, you know, don't do this, don't do that. I'm very bullheaded, very stubborn. I feel like a lot of people learn better through examples or learn better through their mistakes. I was a little different. I would watch people. I would watch the men in my community, the ones that my neighbor taught me how to catch a football, and hearing him out on how to navigate through life, and then watching, you know, what took place with him. And then, you know, I credit a lot to my mother and my sisters. They were the ones, I mean, we laugh and joke about it, but like I grew up fighting with these girls my entire life. And so some of the things that, you know, they would say, they would do, you know, you learn, you got to get back up. And especially like being the only boy in a house full of women, my mom used to always come down hard on me. There are certain things that, you know, you can't do, you can't say, you got to act a certain way. So I learned how to be strong early on, obviously watching the, you know, my mom work a full-time job, take care of the kids, making sure that, you know, she always put, you know, food on our tables, never went to Christmas without having any gifts. So, you know, just watching her get up every day, whether she was tired, hurting, I think that's where it started from, you know? And then I think for me, it really started coming to fruition. My first sport was football. I'll never forget this. I went out. The first thing they did in football trials was conditioning. They had us run basically 2 miles. This is Pee Wee football, by the way. It was different. You know, this is in the hood of Detroit. Yeah. This was the Southfield Panthers. Like, it was rough. And I remember I did that one tryout. I came home. I didn't want to do it again. You know, my stomach hurt. I was sore. I've never done any organized sports in my entire life. And she looked at me and she was like, "You don't quit anything. You get up, you go back out there." Oh, I cried. I cried all the way to the practice field. I didn't want to get out the car. I didn't want to do anything. She forced me to go back out there and to go do it. I did it. I loved it. It got easier. And that's where, you know, it starts to set in of, you know, no matter how hard it hurts or, you know, how difficult it may be, you got to see it through. And so that's something that I instill in my kids today. And, you know, it started from that.
You said a couple of really great things there. And one of them is that what parents do matters so much more than what they say. You can talk about it, but you got to be about it, you know. And your mom modeled toughness. She modeled resilience. She, you know, like you said, she's there going to work every day, no matter how hard it is, no matter how hard life is. And on top of that, her baby boy wasn't going to be any less tough than her, right?
And you know what? My mom, I'm tall. My mom in her prime was 6'1", 215. So when she said something, she meant it. And she, you know, I've seen her throw a brick through a cab windshield. I've seen her, you know, march up. And they call her Queen of the Jungle. That's her nickname. Everyone to this day knows, you know. So she was fierce. She was firm. She was fierce, but she was loving. So I had no choice to do what she said.
The other thing that really strikes me about your story is here you are 20, 30 years later talking about a neighbor that just threw a football with you and earned your respect. And so that you would go to him for bigger life issues. And I think the importance of just doing good, you know, of helping people that we don't have to help is overlooked. I mean, here it is, decades later, you're pointing back to that's what helped me get through childhood is this neighbor starting out, you know, with just throwing the football or whatever. That's really amazing, and it's a really great example, reminder for all of us. Like, we need to give it away, right? We can't just keep it. We got to pay it forward.
The village, you know, I started playing basketball in the 8th grade. I didn't even understand what a pivot was. You know, I couldn't dunk. I couldn't, you know, dribble and chew gum. I met a guy, you know, like I said, my mom taught me not to talk to strangers. This guy's name was Cliff Green. You know, we used to make us call him Coach Green. And I was walking off the court. He was like, "Hey, if you ever want to be, you know, successful in basketball, give me a call," and gave me his card. I went home. I talked to all my friends. I'm like, "Man, you know, who is this guy? Who does he think he is?" You know, talked to my mom about it. My mom was like, "Well, what do you want to do?" I was like, "Well, worst case scenario, let's just give him a call." So I gave him a call. Coach Green, he stood 6'8", 250. He played at University of South Carolina. He was a McDonald's All-American. He coached O.J. Mayo, Bill Walker. I didn't know any of that at the time. Yeah. I just thought he was this random guy, you know, whatever. One of my friends he ended up being a friend. He was at a rival high school. We played against him, and so that was his coach. So he was there supporting him. I gave him a call and said, hey, I want to take you up on your offer. He says, cool. I'll be there tomorrow to pick you up at 6 a.m. This is on a Friday. He wants to pick me up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. At this point, I'm like, what the heck? Like, I want to sleep in. You know, I'm getting into sports, but I wasn't fully invested into basketball like that. At 5:45, he is outside of my door, sitting in the car. I'm like, oh, this he does not play. I get in the car, and he asks me one question. He says, you know, how far do you want to take basketball? He, you know, coming from where I'm coming from, I'm like, hey, I want to go to college. You know, just see what, get a free education. He said, you got to think past that. You're already at that level. You got to start, you know, placing these expectations on yourself. What do you want to do past that? And so I was like, well, I don't think it's realistic for me to go pro. He was like, look, if you're going to have that mindset, we're not going to have this conversation. When you get in the gym, I want you to work as hard as you can. That was pretty much it. You know? We got in the gym. He gave me 2 20-pound dumbbells. And graduating high school, I was 6'7", 177 pounds. So you can imagine how skinny I was my freshman year. These 20-pound dumbbells were so heavy, he had us doing jumps with them. You know, every morning, every day, we started off our workout with those dumbbell skips. We finished our workout with those dumbbell skips. My shoulders are tired. My arms are tired. He's having us do dribble, you know, routines without dribbling the ball, just passing around our legs. I'm doing form shooting without actually shooting the ball. I'm stressed. I'm tired. I'm like, what is this guy doing? I didn't believe in it. I was frustrated. And going back to that football conversation, I didn't want to go back. The next day, he says, hey, or that day, he's like, hey, I'll pick you up at 6 a.m., you know, the next day. We're talking Sunday. I did not want to do it. 6 a.m. comes around. I didn't go out to the car. My mom's home. It's 6 a.m. He is pounding on the door. He's like, you don't have an option. You're not going to quit. Get in the car. Oh, I looked at my mom. I'm like, you going to stop him? You let him come in the house? What's going on? She goes, you better go get in that car. Getting in that car again changed my life. And I cannot credit him enough because I've had a lot of great coaches, you know, and a lot of coaches put a lot of time in, invested in me. He is someone who's never asked for a dime, never asked for gas money. He never tried to use us to market his teams. Only thing he wanted us to do was to be successful. And he, being a father now, to see, you know, I live 20 minutes away from him. And then there was another hour drive north. So he's doing basically an hour and a half trip to pick me up, my friend up, taking us to the gym. We're in the gym for 2-3 hours, bringing us home, doing homework. I mean, we were like his kids. So he definitely taught me what resilience was like from an athlete's perspective. And then obviously growing up with a father figure who was wishy-washy, what it looked like to be resilient as a man, you know? And I think that is where, you know, I had the light bulb moment go off with my mom, but then seeing that person every day get up, you know, invest in his education, invest in all of his athletes, that's where it really kicked into me as an athlete of like, hey, anything worth having in life is not going to be easy. The term blood, sweat, and tears, you have to actually invest that into it. So I learned that because of him at an early age. And every coach I've had since then, you know, they've done nothing but kind of stack on to that. And some coaches were a little harder. They wanted to test you. They wanted to see what you were made of. And I think because of my upbringing, I was always the first one saying, hey, let's do it. I went from being timid and not wanting to do things to saying, let's just go ahead and get it over with. Let's address things head on. And I think now that I can take those skills and kind of translate it into the workforce, you know, I think that's why I was able to jump and go from so many careers and still land on my feet and still be successful.
What an incredible testimony of just selfless love. To go out of your way and to really invest in someone else with what he's got, right? Basketball was his thing, and he didn't try to turn you into a banker or something. He went with he's good at and said, okay, this is my platform. This is what God's given me, and I'm going to give it away to other people. Man, and it's, as you have said so beautifully, changed the whole trajectory of your life from believing maybe I could possibly do this in college to whoo, off we go.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, tell me about getting through college and the pro leagues. That's gotta be some resilience there, my man.
I'll start with college. It was Yeah, it was an experience. So I went to a small school. I transferred schools, actually. So I started off at the University of Northwestern Ohio. Little school, Lima, Ohio. It was a D2. Enjoyed it, had some good friends, coaching staff. Wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I came into that school with some very high expectations. You know, in D2 levels, it's not like D1. They only have a certain amount of scholarships. So it's more cutthroat. And what I didn't know was they had only had like one class up until I got there. And that class stayed with them. They kind of started the program. They were seniors. What I didn't know is the head coach at that point in time was talking to that senior class saying, hey, you know, we've got these recruits coming in that are freshmen that are better than you right now. And obviously it was me, two other people. We didn't think anything of it. I believe there was 8 freshmen total, but out of the 8 freshmen, myself and 2 other people ended up getting full ride scholarships. And so we came into it, and my position, the guy in front of me, that senior, he was the team captain. His dad owned like the local restaurant. So they were on the booster club, and he was pretty much a shoe-in to, you know, be that starter. I didn't know these things. So I'm coming in, I'm coming in aggressive. I'm coming in knowing like, hey, I know I can play. And, you know, when you go to college, you don't just jump right into practices. You've got some open gyms. You've got some summer workouts. So I went through all that, and I am killing this guy, man. I mean, it was to the point where everyone else is like, you know, his name was Brandon. Like, hey, Brandon, he's going to take your spot. He's like 6'4", 220. Again, I'm 6'7". I'm, 200 pounds soaking wet, way more athletic. You know, I could shoot better. He had a better IQ of the game, but he wasn't a scorer. And so I'm coming in thinking, I can guard, I can score, I can keep up. I'm one of the tallest on the team, and I'm the fastest on the team. Why am I not starting? First couple practices, still killing this guy. First game, we played a number 3 team in the country. I end up with like 17 points. You know, I'm guarding an All-American, and I knew that going into it. I was nervous, you know. Yeah. As a freshman, you know, he's a senior. He's an All-American. They just won the national championship at St. Francis. I felt like, hey, I held my own, you know. I want to say within the first 5-6 games, I ended up averaging 15, 16 points a game, you know, which is, you know, my perspective, really good for a freshman. Yeah. Conference comes around. Coach says, hey, you're not going to get any playing time. Like, conference is a lot different than non-conference games. Mm. And so I'm like, this makes no sense. I'm shooting well. I'm playing well. I'm having a good freshman season. And then I set the first 3 games. I'm frustrated. I'm doing everything I can in practice. He tells me you're not going to be a scorer, set screens, get your teammates open, completely changes like how I view the game. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, what can I do to get on the court? Every time I go talk to him, he's telling me, hey, go be like Brandon. Brandon's a senior. He's passing the ball. And I'm like, this, I can't play like that, you know? And I'm getting to the point where, you know, in locker rooms at halftime, I'm pissed because I'm throwing water bottles. We're down 15, 16 points and we're losing games. We went 5-25 this season. So I'm obviously frustrated because I'm like, hey, I can contribute in what we're missing. Finally, he throws me out there, and he kind of threw me to the wolves. He's just like, go, do what you can do. And I forgot who we were playing, but I want to say we were playing University of Toledo. And this guy, I'm guarding, you know, 6'8", 250. The other guy's like 6'8", 250. And they're just like taking turns, man. And like I said, I'm a 200 pounds soaking wet. It was rough. And so it took for me to kind of get back out there and hear him like, but have belief in me to recognize like, my teammates have my back, obviously, but I got to do something. You know, they're killing me. They're killing our team. You know, we're in foul trouble too. So I go out there, I do my best. I ended up the game with like 12 points, 12 rebounds. We still lost the game, obviously, but because of that performance in the second half of that game, he kind of saw what I was made out of. It was like, okay, I'll give you more playing time. Mm-hmm. And so the second half of the season, I kind of worked my way back into the rotation. I wasn't a starter. And then I finished off the season with a 20-point, 15-rebound game. And at that point in time, he looked at me and was like, all right, I apologize. You can actually do something, you know? So, you know, that's kind of how we ended that season. Obviously, we didn't make the tournament. We went 5-25. It is what it is. Going into my sophomore year, because that whole class graduated, I'm now one of the upperclassmen. We have the whole team of 12 people. eight of those people are sophomores, you know? And so now we went from being, you know, not playing at all, playing very little minutes, having an older, you know, squad, losing a bunch of games, to now being super young, super athletic, a whole different play style. And we run off the first 10 games. I think we went 10-0. Conference time comes back around, same thing. We ended up losing almost every game after that point. It was rough, you know? And so at this point in my career, aside from travel basketball, I never had a winning record, you know. In high school, I think the best record we had was 10-10 or 11-11, I'm sorry. And then obviously freshman year in college, we went 5-25. Sophomore year, we went 10-22 or something like that, you know. So never had a winning record. I go in his office, him and I get into a heated debate. You know, he calls me a 6'7" lemon. I didn't really know what that meant at that point in time. He says, well, you can't do anything, you know. And so I transfer schools. I transfer to Tryon University. And that was, you talk about changing the trajectory of your life, that was the pivotal point in my life. I went from being, you know, this star athlete to, you know, being on billboards, being on the cover of magazines, being in commercials, to going to the Division III school in Angola, Indiana. And the coach looks at me, he goes, take that off. Like, you're not wearing this anywhere. I don't want to see this. And these are like Jordan shorts, Jordan apparel. And my eyes, like, this is pretty, you know, nice, expensive stuff. I don't want to take this off. He goes, you're not wearing it on this campus. And he lays the law down, you know, very clear. He goes, I didn't want you here. I think you can contribute, but you're going to have to earn your keep. No one's going to get a shoe in. So, fine. He says, you know, when you go to class, you sit in the front of the class, every class, you're not late, et cetera, et cetera. If you cannot do what I'm asking of you, you're going to meet me on the track and we're going to run every morning. Being who I am, you know. I walked into one of my classes. I sat in the back. I had my hood on. I was minding my business. I wasn't being disruptive. I was listening, but it wasn't his expectation. Mm-hmm. And so at practice, he's like, hey, don't forget, you're going to meet me in the morning on the indoor track at 6 a.m. What I didn't know is, you know, he ran 5 miles every day. Mm-hmm. So, and I hate running. I'm a sprinter. I don't do distance at all. And so he comes in, you know, he has his headphones in. He takes them out. He goes, don't let me lap you. Go. So I start running, you know, whatever. Maybe 4 laps around the track is a mile. So I want to say maybe a mile and a half into it, you know, he laps me. So at this point, I'm like, well, what's the point of me running? You've already lapped me. I'm gassed. It's 6:30, 6:45 at this point in time. Like, I got class at 8. I got to eat breakfast. Like, I'm ready to go, you know? Yeah. And so I didn't have the best attitude because he was hard on me and I wasn't ready for it. And so I sat down on the track. He didn't like it. He ran by. He picks me up, pushes me, tells you, no, keep running. So we ran maybe 3 miles. And at that point in time, he told me something that at the time I thought was weird. He said, hey, I want you to know that I'm going to be hard on you. I love you. I support you. But this is not how we act. Remind you, all I did was sit in the back of the classroom. That's it. Oh, my legs burned. I still had to go through shoot around. I still had to do open gym. I still had to do weights. I was hurting because I'm not a runner. But at that point in time, you know, I went back. I did my ice bath. I was talking to my roommates. I called Coach Green, you know, and he was like, you got to listen to your coach. You have to do those things if you want to be successful in life. Felt like he was nitpicking, but again, kind of just that reiteration of resiliency, of getting back up, of doing the same thing. And at times that I wanted to quit, I still had people who I could lean on to kind of help encourage me. And so I did just that. I went, I sat in front of the class. And one thing that I didn't recognize at that point in time that I recognize now is there's a big difference between being in the front of the classroom and the back of the classroom. Mm-hmm. When you're in the front of the classroom, you can almost see the teacher's notes. You can see the perspective. You can see, you know, how they expect you to know more of the information because you're in the front of the classroom. You're always going to be one of, you know, the kids to get picked on more to know the answers. You're going to go first. You get a lot of more opportunities, not only to participate in class and to get more answers, but also to get out of class too. Those are some just the little things that I didn't know about, you know, until I took his advice. I mean, that was pretty much it, you know. Tryon University, Coach Miller, he, you know, ended up being Division III Coach of the Year. They won a national championship, I believe, 2 years ago. He changed my life because of his the way he handled me. I mean, there's a picture of us somewhere, of us almost getting into a fist fight, man. I mean, we're nose to nose. I was always aggressive in my approach with him. And he met that same energy of like, hey, one of us is going to back down. It's not going to be me. He said, I've been in three fights in my life and I lost one of them. I said, hey, coach, I've been in a lot more than three fights in my life and I haven't lost any of them. Normally, you know, some coaches kind of blow it off, whatever. He's like, well, if you want to go, we can go. And I was like, all right, you mean business. I'll have to send you that picture of us face to face, because he was somebody who I respected because, again, he cared about you, but he wasn't going to let you get out of character. He wasn't going to let you let him down. He wasn't going to let you let yourself down. And so he's taught me so many life lessons about just being a detail planner, being a good coach, being a good leader. I mean, I was the assistant coach at Tryon University. I had already graduated college, and I came to practice without a practice plan. Part of my duties as the assistant coach was I was also the head coach of the JV program. And so, you know, all day he's like, hey, where's your practice plan? I blew it off. I was working at this point in time. I show up to practice. He goes, where's your practice plan? Like, I don't have one. He goes, go home. And at the time, I'm living in Fort Wayne, and I'm driving to Angola. So as you know, that's like a 45-minute drive north. Yeah. And so I'm like, go home. I just drove 45. I'm not going. He goes, go home. If you're not ready, your team's not going to be ready. Go home. And so he ran practice. Wow. And he called me when he was done. He goes, hey, you know, you're the leader of this program. You can't come in and just wing things. You have to be detailed in your approach. You have to be able to lead this group of young men so they know how to be prepared for the real world. And that's kind of where it let me know that, you know, I am now, you know, that person that's going to teach these kids, you know, how to be resilient, how to be detailed, how to be organized. And they're relying on me the same way I'm relying on him. So, that was that portion of it. And then transferring and going playing basketball overseas, I didn't think I could do it, to be honest. And because I transferred schools, I was at this weird time where when you transfer, Northwestern Ohio was on quarters, but Tryon was on semesters. And so my credits got all messed up. So I had to stay an extra semester. And at this point in time, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what am I going to do with my life? All of my friends are still playing basketball. I'm no longer playing basketball. I can't really coach either because I'm still a student. So I can't sit the bench. And so I'm like, well, I can just try it, you know? And so I text him. I'm like, hey, I want to get ready to go to this combine. Just kind of see how it goes. Text me back. He goes, don't waste my time. If you're serious, take it serious. And so I'm like, all right, like I'm serious about this. I want to do this. We go in the gym the next day, and he's my coach for 2 years, by the way. He worked me so hard in this one practice that I recognized like, oh, I'm not ready for the next level, you know? And so we kept that same workout regimen until I felt comfortable, you know, with that regimen. After that, you know, going out and just kind of showing what you're made of. You know, a lot of people think that if you can score a lot of points, you can go play overseas. Basketball is so much bigger than that. You know, they want to see how you can contribute to the win, to the team, and more than just points. You know, so setting back screens, getting rebounds, getting assists, just being a good leader, being a good glue guy. That was my perspective, and that was my role. So playing basketball overseas was definitely a challenge. Obviously, you're in some countries that don't speak English, so you have your head coach, you have the translator. You're trying to figure out, you know, do I look at the head coach? Do I look at the translator? We're Americans. We're always taught you look somebody in the eye, but the translator's the one's talking. So it's like always this weird of like, I'll need to look at you. I need to look at the board. But also I'm trying to look at you to like interpret what you're saying. Yeah. So that was one struggle as well. And then just getting adapted to, you know, being away from your family, being away from, you know, everyone you love and you trust. And when you're on the other side of the world, I mean, you're playing a game at 6 o'clock at night, you know, but it may be, you know, 3 p.m. the next day in another country. And so you're trying to call somebody to talk about how the game went and they're at work, you know. And then the only time they can talk to you is when they're off work. But by that point in time, it's like 2-3 in the morning your time. And so you're like, we got to just schedule times to have this conversation. And then for me specifically, battling injuries, man, I was blessed to not have any back issues, hip or knee issues. I've had a lot of ankle issues. You know, I've broken my left ankle once. I've rolled my ankle so much that my growth plates won't close. So I was supposed to be 6'10". I'm still kind of like what came first between the chicken or the egg. So because I've rolled my ankle so many times, my growth plates won't close. Since my growth plates won't close in my ankles, I'm going to always have weak ankles, you know? And so coming back to the States, kind of giving up on playing professionally, giving up on just playing competitively. I started playing at just, men's league, open gyms. I ended up rolling my ankles again. This time, I got a talus, a piece of your talus bone chipped off. And so going through the cortisone shots, rehabs, pain pills, that's always been something that I struggled with early on. But then recognize that the best way to get over it is by doing two things. One, just attacking each day, at a time. Don't worry about where you're supposed to be at 10 days from now. Don't worry about a couple hours from now. What are you doing right now in the moment? And give it your best. And so that's kind of the mindset that I've had with me with everything that I do is, try not to get too far ahead of yourself. Give it your best shot your first time. Focus on the moment. I always tell my staff now, I tell my kids this too, because they're starting to get into sports. Focus on what you can control. You can't control coaches' decisions. What I can control is how much energy I put into my rehab. What I can control is my mindset going into this. I know I don't want to do this, but if I walk in with that mindset, then I'm not going to be able to give it my all. So one thing that I do with my teams that I coach now is if we've got an hour and a half practice, I'll put 90 minutes on the board and just say, hey, we've got 90 minutes. And let's make the mess of these nine, the best of these 90 minutes that we have right here and worry about the rest later. And so I would then take that 90 minutes and put together a nice little playlist and just say, hey, we're going to go with a song, you know? So each song's roughly 3, 4 minutes, sometimes five. Focus on this drill for the duration of this song. Give it your all. Once this song is done, grab a water break. We're going to hit right, we're going to get right back into it. And so it's been very successful, very useful for me. I've seen a lot of positive reinforcements from the kids that I used to coach. And then also from the staff here at the HealthPlex with that same mindset. So I always tell my staff now, we have quarterly meetings for an hour. We can't tackle every issue in the building in this 1 hour, but let's focus on what we can control for these next 60 minutes and get to a conclusion. So just playing overseas and college, those things definitely help shape my mindset on, like I said, how to be a leader, how to be organized, and how to be detailed.
Parents that are listening to this, I hope you hear Todd's testimony that a coach that is hard on you is the greatest gift in life, because the coaches that let you be lazy, well, then we sink to that low common denominator, you know. And nowadays, it's fair game to criticize a coach, and we don't want to make him hold kids accountable or make them run. We definitely don't want them to get in their face and say, you want to fight me, right?
No.
But somebody that cared enough to hold you to that high standard has helped shape who you are and get you the success you've had. That's a wonderful thing. What you're saying there about one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time, that's beautiful. And that's helped people, so many people in recovery and athletics and you name it. It's an important mindset. I just got to do what's in front of me and control the controllables. And that's beautifully said. I appreciate you sharing your story with us so much.
Anytime.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience, the podcast that helps you find the tools to withstand and recover from difficulties. Go be resilient. So I'm going to stop.
Season 3 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by Triple R Nutrition. Triple R Nutrition is a very clean, very pure way for you to get all the nutrition you need. It doesn't matter if it's whey that I'm holding right here, creatine, daily multivitamins, fat burners, rest, sleep, anything you need. Very clean. It's very pure. But it doesn't just stop with how much it does for your body. This line of supplements was designed specifically to support the Envision La Fuente ministry in the country of El Salvador that takes disadvantaged youth and offers them a brighter future through education. Be a part of doing great things for your body and doing great things in the world. Triple R Nutrition. See in the show notes exactly the link to click on and get everything you need to help yourself and help the world be a better place. As always, if you need coaching
in resilience or in your hybrid racing, get a hold of us. We love to hear from our listeners. Give us feedback on the show. You can reach out to me at coach.ricardo on Instagram or Ricardo Mullinax on Facebook.